It's Monday, the 20th of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Luke Babbitt and congratulations to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Show brought to you by Fantrax and A-Loading. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast like A-Loading, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. Thank you, A-Loading. And of course, thank you to Fantrax. If you don't know about Fantrax, they're the sponsor of this podcast, but they are the best spot to host any of your fantasy leagues. When you're on Fantrax, you have as much customization, if more customization, than you have on any other site for hosting leagues. There's the best premium model around. There's the best free model around on Fantrax. It's not just basketball. They do it for all sports. So make sure you're checking out Fantrax and taking your league there. You want contracts in your league. You want to do three-team trades. You want to do salaries. You want to do real salaries. You want to do slow drafts, which you don't have to do via a spreadsheet or an email chain. Fantrax handles all this for you. Don't stuff around with these other sites that are stuck 10 years in the past. Fantrax has every option you could possibly want. And majority of them are free, so sign up on Fantrax. And when you do that, there is a promo code you can use, which is REDROCK, and that puts you in the draw to get $100 worth of Fantrax cash, which you can use on upgrading your league to a premium league as well. I've taken all my leagues across to Fantrax, and I'll continue to do it because not just because they're the sponsor of this podcast, but because all the options that they allow, it is just mind-boggling. So sign up, check it out, and I guarantee you'll be in love with all the options that they offer over on Fantrax. Just a quick note before we get into this podcast. This is the Cleveland Cavaliers season in review show, coming just after Game 7 of the NBA Finals, in which the Cleveland Cavaliers were victorious. If you like fantasy football, make sure you're checking out the Red Rock Fantasy Football podcast with Russell Clay and Jordan Schiltz as the two hosts. Their first episode should be coming this week. The show is available to download or subscribe to on iTunes. It is on Stitcher. You can find it on Blog Talk Radio as well. And you can just go and follow the Twitter handle, which is Red Rock Football, and that will tell you each time a new episode is announced. Of course, you can find Jordan and Russell on Twitter as well, and their Twitter handles are in the Red Rock Football bio. But if you're a fantasy football fan, Jordan and Russell have got a tremendous amount of information to share with you guys, and I'm pretty confident about this new podcast that it's going to go through the roof. I'll be making a couple of guest appearances on the show, but Russell and Jordan know their stuff, and they've got a great map out of what they're doing throughout the preseason, and I really like the look of what they're doing. So fantasy football fans, make sure you're checking out the Red Rock Football podcast. That's enough introduction stuff.
Let's get to it.
We're talking Cleveland Cavaliers, and just I mentioned this a few weeks back when the Raptors had squared things up with the Cavs and the Thunder and the Warriors were battling. I love seeing a team who's never won a championship win a championship. I'm fine with the Warriors winning because I really like the Warriors. My son's a Warriors fan. I'm fine. I would love the Warriors to win as well. I'm a massive fan of Steph. In fact, there's a majority of teams that I have no issue with winning. But I love seeing a team who has never won win, and that's exactly I can imagine the emotion that Cleveland fans are feeling at the moment. I think it all stems back to my Australian football team, the Western Bulldogs, who has not won a championship or a premiership, as we call it here, since 1954. So we've been waiting a long time, and I can imagine the emotion that was waiting for these Cleveland Cavaliers fans, and to win it the way they did, being 3-1 down and having to come back in this game as well, not having a lead through majority of the game. And just the quality of the game, the quality of the performances, and the quality of LeBron James. Really, the emotion throughout Cleveland, for Cavaliers fans worldwide, must be absolutely through the roof at the moment. So congratulations, Cavaliers players. I'm sure plenty of you are listening to this. Congratulations to everyone in Cleveland. Congratulations to all the Cavaliers fans around the world. Superb stuff from LeBron. Superb stuff from Kyrie. Superb stuff from everyone across the whole season. Absolutely tremendous way to end the NBA season with an epic Game 7, an epic Finals. The playoffs were probably a little bit lackluster at times, but we still had a Warriors comeback from three. We had two 3-1 down comebacks in the playoffs, Warriors over Thunder, and then the Cavs to knock off the Warriors. We had a record-setting regular season. We had Steph Curry having a record-setting regular season himself. Just stupid stuff happening all over the place. Historic rookie performances from Karl-Anthony Towns in particular. really a superb NBA season. And the NBA season, it doesn't really take a break. We've got the draft coming up in 4 days. And if you are an NBA draft fan, which you should be, make sure, if you haven't already, check out the mock draft podcast that we recorded yesterday, which is episode 620. Myself, Mark Roberts, Cole McEwen, Matt Smith, Dean Vasek, Matt Sanfrone, and Aaron Bruschi. We all took part. We took teams and we drafted the entire first round. So make sure you're checking out that mock draft as well. Let's go into the Cavs as a season in review, because that's what this podcast is. We're not going to be focusing too much on the championship. You can get that sort of information from other podcasts and checking out, you know, how Game 7 broke down. That's not sort of what we're here to do, but you know, I've given my take on it. It was absolutely stupendous, the performance from Cleveland throughout the playoffs, and I couldn't be happier for them. And I know a lot of people hate LeBron. I don't really know how you can. I've got no issue with him. There are certain players that really, really do my head in. LeBron isn't one of them. So congratulations to him and to the entire team and all of the Cavs fans around the world. I've said that a few times, but hearty congratulations goes out. The Cavs finished the regular season with a 57-25 record. It's obviously no 73-9. It's not even 67 that the Spurs won. But still, they end up taking home the Larry O'Brien trophy. And they'll be pretty happy with themselves, I'd imagine. No picks in this upcoming draft. They've traded it to get players like Timofey Mozgov to come across, who in the end didn't do a huge amount. But that's the sort of sacrifices they made. They were running an extraordinary payroll of over $105 million for this season. They went all in to win. They won. Dan Gilbert, the investment's worth it. The city of Cleveland, it's all worth it in the end. Let's have a look at their roster for next season. A couple of things we already know. J.R. Smith has opted out of his player option. He had a player option for $5 million. He's opted out of that, so he'll be an unrestricted free agent. Tim Mozgov is an unrestricted free agent as well. Who knows what's going to happen with him on the open market. We've got Richard Jefferson, who's announced his retirement today after, you know, honestly, at 35 years of age, it's nothing more than a bonus for the sort of play that Jefferson gave. Just tremendous. They've got James Jones, who's an unrestricted free agent. They've got Dante Jones, who's got a non-guaranteed deal at $1.5 million. There's Jordy McRae with a team option of just $870,000. I'd imagine they'd want to pick that up. And Matt Dellavedova is a restricted free agent as well. And of course, LeBron James has a player option, which he's undoubtedly going to opt out of. But what does he do? Now, I've heard a lot of people say that if the Cavs win, then he's definitely back for next season. I'm not so sure about that. Maybe he's back for one more season, but I reckon the fact that he's won, he's done what he needed to do, what he set out to do to bring a championship to Cleveland. I wouldn't be surprised if, I think it's probably 10% chance he leaves now, but after next season, I think that LeBron may not necessarily remain in Cleveland now that he's set out and achieved his goal. And achieved what he set out to do, and that was win a championship for Cleveland. It'd be pretty ballsy to go out and say, look, won the championship, Cleveland, all great, I'm off. That'd be pretty ballsy, but I reckon it probably, for the 2017 season, I think we might be seeing LeBron in a different jersey. That's just complete gut feel. But I think that this actually makes it more likely that he does leave Cleveland again, rather than less likely. But hey, he might not leave again at all, and fair enough, but I could see that being a situation. I don't think it's going to happen this offseason, though, but hey, there's always intrigue when it comes to LeBron. Let's wait and see how it all plays out. Let's look at this team, and of course, we'll start with LeBron, and it's fairly evident by now, and it should be evident to anyone who watches basketball, LeBron does not go full pace in the regular season. We're aware of that. He was just out of control in the finals. He was the finals MVP comfortably. He was a game saver. He was a game winner. He did everything for this team. And for fantasy, we're not counting the playoffs. We've got to look at what he does in the regular season. He takes time off. He goes in second gear, maybe third gear. And it's still good enough for him to be the ninth ranked player in nine cat leagues and seventh in eight cat, which was actually an improvement on what he did the year before, where he was 12th and 8th in nine and eight cats respectively. But what do you do when you draft LeBron? You know, you could make the argument, and it's a pretty good argument, that he's still the best player in the game based on what we saw in the finals, but he's not doing that throughout the regular season, so you can't pick him as the number one pick, as a number two pick, as a number three pick. In fact, you know, picking him inside the top six is pretty hard at this point. I think if you're looking in an eight-cat sort of format, you know, that probably 8 to 10 range is probably where you get LeBron. And if you're going to get 25.5 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 1.6 steals, 0.8 blocks and 1.2 triples, it's pretty bloody hard to complain about that, which is what he averaged over the course of the season. He shot 52%, 72% from the line, and only 32% of his threes. We know he struggles with his shooting. But what do you do with LeBron when conceivably he could take it even down another notch next season and go a little bit slower? You're not going to have him above Steph. You're not going to have him above Russ. You're not going to have him above Kawhi, above Jim Harden. You're not going to have him probably ahead of Paul. You know, Karl Anthony Towns, DeMarcus Cousins, where do those guys fit in? You know, Kevin Durant, he's obviously not ahead of either. It's a real interesting spot with what you do with LeBron. In a dynasty league, I reckon you might even be able to sneak LeBron outside the top 10 in a dynasty format. Wouldn't be shocked, and you're still going to get, I reckon, three or four seasons of at least top 15 production out of him. But it is pretty clear to me at this point that in the regular season, he turns it down. And despite the fact that he still played over 36 minutes a game, he just wasn't as balls out. He wasn't as doing everything. He wasn't as extending himself on the defensive end as what we saw in the finals. And to put up those numbers is obviously incredible. LeBron is comfortably the best player on this team, and without any sort of doubt whatsoever. He led the team in win shares. He had a massive win shares per 48. His box score plus minus was 9.1. His VORP was 7.6. His true shooting was 59%. He led the team in assist percentage with only a 13% turnover. He had a usage of 31. He was incredible on both ends of the court. A huge positive on both ends. But you know that about LeBron already. You don't need me to really start waxing about how good LeBron James is as a player. It's just something to watch that we might see maybe another half a step down next season as he further saves himself for the playoffs. Coming off a season where he played 100 games and potentially playing in the Olympics, he's not going to be going balls out for the majority of the regular season, and that's something you really do have to pay attention to when you're looking at drafting and building a team, because if he's not going balls out, then he's not a top 5 player, then he's probably not a top 7 player, and that really is something that you do need to pay attention to. If we look at what LeBron did this season versus last season, he scored more. He grabbed almost 2 more rebounds per game. Yeah, assists and threes were down a little bit. His steals were the same. His blocks were up marginally. But the field goal percentage, a big key. And that's something that really fueled his value through his time in Miami. But he took his field goal percentage up 4%. He was down at only 48.8 last year, which was a drop-off from 57 the year before that. But to get it back over 50 is key. And that was one of the biggest things that was fueling his fantasy rank previously. And he got that back up really by just not taking as many jumpers. But his three-point shot got worse, only hit 32% when he was a 35 guy last season. And he started to hit it a bit in the finals, but I don't think he has much trust in it over the course of the regular season. I don't think you should have much trust in it either, but still, I reckon you can count on 51, 52 plus percent from the field, and that's a pretty good percentage when you're taking 20 odd shots per game. Let's talk Kevin Love. Everyone's favorite guy to bash, we know that. Yes, he has matchup difficulties. There's trade rumors abounding about him. Maybe he does get traded this offseason. He was still pretty good, I thought. I didn't think he was terrible. Today, he was fine in Game 7. Did what he needed to do. I think he was a plus 17 or something in that game. I should go back to LeBron's on-off for the season was 16.5. That's huge. Love's 5.5, so not fantastic, but still pretty good. And he was the 39th ranked player in 9 cat leagues. He was the 46th in 8 cat leagues. And I think that as long as he remains on the Cavs, that's what we really should start to expect from him. Just not Minnesota Kevin Love, obviously, but a guy that's 15.7 points, 9.7 rebounds, 2 triples, 2.5 assists, 0.7 steals, half a block. And one of the biggest things that's dropped for him coming to Cleveland is his assists, because he was the second ball handler playmaker in Minnesota. He's third on this team behind Kyrie and behind LeBron. So his assist numbers are basically in half since that last season in Minnesota. His scoring is obviously way down as well, and he's taking 6 less shots per game and hitting them at a lower percentage as well. He only hit 41% of his shots this season, still 83% from the line and 37% from three, and he hit 2.1 triples a game, which is obviously great. But his numbers, say 16, 10, 2.5, half a block, 2 threes, they're still pretty good numbers, and you're still fairly comfortable with taking him around that top four rounds, back of the fourth round, maybe start of the fifth round. If he goes somewhere else, then all bets are off. Then maybe he sneaks into becoming a second round player. And I think a lot of people would have real caution with taking him in the second round, and you would be able to get him probably in the third if he went to another team. But he could comfortably become a top 20 guy again if he was in the right situation. His numbers weren't too dissimilar to last season. A couple more threes, slightly less scoring, same rebounds, similar assists, steals and blocks identical, and just a bit of a drop-off in his efficiency. But overall, Kevin Love is what he is, and he was pretty impressive for this team. His win shares were right up there, second on the team. Box score plus minus, he was actually a positive in defensive box score plus minus, which a lot of people might be surprised at. Offensively, he was okay at 2.5 overall, which was second on the team. Second on the team in VORP, had a PER of 19 still, so really hard to bash him too hard for the season. Yes, he has defensive liabilities, but I don't think his defense is as bad as some people make it out to be. And that's what happens with general consensus on people. Ennis Cantor's a great example. Kevin Love's a great example. They can be bad at defense, and they could have limits and struggles there, but they're not horrible. They're not horrific. And then we completely overrate how bad it is. Oh, he's trash. You can't keep him out there. And you know what? That's fine. Yeah, Anderson Varejao can take Kevin Love off the dribble. That's not great, but he also wasn't terrible. And what he can do offensively, floor spacing, is pretty key as well. So I'll really be looking to see what they do with him, whether he does move to another team or not, because then he becomes a real steal sort of option on another team, you know, with the potential to become a top 20 guy again. Kyrie. Massive fan of Kyrie. Massive. Prior to last season, I said that he was a player that should be approaching the first round status. Ended up being 11th in NICAT leagues last season, 9th in 8CAT leagues. Definitely had a drop off this season. You missed those first 2 months of the season. Came back, missed a few games here and there. Had some minutes issues and just literally wasn't feeling himself at all. He was the 55th ranked player in 9CAT leagues and 48th in 8CAT leagues. If you aren't convinced that Kyrie isn't an elite player in the NBA at this point, I don't think you were watching the playoffs. I don't think you were watching the finals, because he was absolutely tremendous in those games. And he, to me, is set to be a player who could be a real steal next season. Like Love, I think that he ends up probably going in the third round, and he has got every chance in the world to find himself being a top 15 player again next season, because he was the year before. And I don't want to hear the arguments, and I'm not going to hear them because you're not going to say them to me, but he's got LeBron. He won't be that guy again. In LeBron's first season, he was the 9th ranked player. He was ranked, I think, ahead of LeBron. That's how good he was. He still averaged 21, 3, and 4.5 with 1.8 triples, 1.2 steals on 46 and 88. Now, 46% on a point guard who's shooting as much as him, 18 shots a game, and hitting threes at 36%. He is a bloody ripper. He is really, really good. I'm a massive, massive Kyrie fan. A lot of people aren't, and I do think that he is an elite prospect, and there is a huge chance that he finishes as a top 10 player next season. I would not be shocked at all. If you look at what he did this season, he obviously didn't play too much, but a PER of almost 20, true shooting of 54 is not bad, nice win shares numbers. Defense is a concern, but he's not as bad a defender as CJ McCollum. He's not as bad a defender as Damian Lillard, and the advanced stats bear that out. It was a negative 1.4 defensive box score plus minus, but offensively he was a 3. And overall, he was the fifth best player in VORP on this team, playing only 53 games. I think that's pretty impressive, and I do imagine him shooting back up. He is clearly the second best player on this team, and you should be able to get him probably outside the second round next year, and I reckon it'll be pretty much a bargain, unless some sort of injury strikes, which we know has happened to him quite a bit in his career. But Kyrie is a guy that I think can find himself back inside that top 20 without any worry whatsoever. Junior Smythe. You know who Junior Smythe is. J.R. Smith. He had an on-off of just 0.5. He was okay this season. The 93rd ranked player in 9CAT leagues. 116th in 8CAT. But it was a drop-off from the season before. He definitely wasn't quite as good as what he was the previous season. But he did play 32 minutes a night, which is 3 extra minutes. He scored basically the same 12 points and hit 2.7 triples a game. That's a huge contribution. But he doesn't do enough in the other areas. 2.9 rebounds, 1.6 assists, which was down from 2.8. That's a big drop-off. That's the first time in the last 6 years that he's averaged less than 2 assists per game. 1.1 steals, and he is a pretty decent source of steals. 42 and 63 from the line. And he shot 41% from three. He's always been an elite three-point shooter. His last 3 years, 39, 38, and now 41. Obviously, tremendous shooting. But the lack of assists caused him to drop that 20, 30 spots in the rankings. And you might think going from 2.8 to 1.6 assists is not a big deal, but that it is. That's what causes drops of that sort of magnitude. Smith, you would think that the Cavs would look to re-sign him, but maybe they don't. Maybe Dan Gilbert doesn't want to be paying you $150 million a year moving forward with this team now that they have won a championship. So who knows what happens with JR, but he's going to be that guy that provides nice steals, a decent source of, an excellent source of three-pointers, decent scoring, but overall not much else. Doesn't hurt your field goal percentage as much as what you might think. He's not a horrible chucker. He only took 10 shots a game this year and hit him at 42%. So that's not a massive negative impact. And that's something that is, it's important. Overall, advanced stats-wise, defense, he was just a marginal negative. He was overall, he's a pretty positive guy. Third in the team in VORP, below average PER. But overall, his advanced numbers basically just tell us who he is. And we know that he's a guy who's a shooter. 54% true shooting, a decent offensive player who does have the ability to create and didn't do it this season, and not a liability defensively, but not really a positive defensively either. Tristan Thompson, another guy who's a very easy butt of jokes. 5 years, $84 million for a bench warmer. Cool. That's fine. But Dan Gilbert said, we need to pay this guy. We can't replace him if we don't pay him. Their slogan this season was all in. Gilbert said, we're all in. Have your $80 million. And be really one of the best offensive rebounders in the game, one of the best rebounders in the game, and a guy that just fills his role and does it almost perfectly. He was a great 4.7 on-off. He was 126th in 9-cat leagues and 165th in 8-cat leagues. He's a guy that goes through stretches of, I need to own him, I can't own him, really depending on what's happening sort of with him at the moment. He averaged 9 boards a game in 28 minutes, and that's obviously useful in any sort of fantasy league. So he's shooting 58% from the field. He's only on 5 attempts a game, but it's still a really high number. Now, the 61% on 3 attempts from the line, that's not good. 0.7 blocks, I wouldn't say that's spectacular. 0.8 assists, that's definitely not spectacular. 7.5 points, also not good, but he's a great source of rebounds and a great source of field goal percentage, and yes, solid sort of block numbers. Can he get better? I don't think so. Maybe he can, maybe I'm wrong. I think that what he does at the moment is basically what he's going to provide. Great rebounding, really good offensive rebounding, really high field goal percentage, subpar free throws, and nothing else really standing out. Not going to be a great rim protector in terms of block numbers. He sort of just is who he is. I can see him getting more than 28 minutes per game next season and playing at 31 or 32 minutes a night, and that might sneak him inside the top 100. I don't think that's too far-fetched. He's not old by any stretch. How old is he, actually? He's only 25, so he does have a fair bit of room to continue to grow, and I think that Thompson might be that guy who has a couple of seasons where he is inside the top 100 and finds himself ranked 90th, 95th, 85th, for 2-3 years in a row, and it might start next season. It really depends on how they want to run their rotation, and if Love is back, and if Fry is back, and if Mozgov is back, which seems unlikely at this point. But Thompson is obviously a huge, huge key piece of this team. He was third on the team in VORP. He was in box score plus minus. He was fourth on the team at 1.5, in one of the highest defensive box score plus minuses on the team. He was fifth in that metric. His win shares per 48 were through the roof. He was second in that metric as well. True shooting of 61, above average PER. And really hard to fault a huge amount. And he's doing all this with a usage of just under 12%. So doesn't need the ball in his hands, but contributes in so many different areas. And those sort of players, honestly, they're like gold on a team. Matthew Dellavedova had his struggles in the finals, but he was a key piece of this team. He played Mo Williams out of the rotation for the majority of the season. And you look at his on-off numbers. He was the second highest player on this team with 8.2, second behind LeBron, ahead of Kyrie, ahead of Love, ahead of JR, ahead of Thompson. And he was 223rd in 9-cat leagues, 199th in 8-cat leagues, but started the season really before Kyrie came back as a guy that you had to consider owning in definitely in 14-team leagues, and even in some 12-team formats, he had some value. He ended up playing 22 minutes a game this season, 6.5 points with one triple a game. He gave you 4 assists and 0.5 steals. And that right there, 1.1 triples, 4.1 assists, 0.5 steal, and 83% from the line is probably enough to have him on and off or shuttled on and off rosters for those first 2 to 3 months of the season. Now, with Kyrie hopefully being fully fit next season, unless something happens, and if, depending where Daly goes, he's not going to go anywhere and be a starting point guard anywhere. But you know, paid 24 minutes off the bench, those 4 assists, they're worth their weight in gold. It's really tough to find assists, and getting a guy who gives you 4 of them and then adds some threes and shoots a 3 at 39%, which is obviously fantastic. He's a real key player, and again, a player who knows his role and does exactly what he needs to do. Steps up, shoots if he needs to, you know, passes if he needs to, you know, defends when he needs to, whacks a guy in the nuts when he needs to. He does whatever is necessary for a team to win. It's reflected in his on-off numbers, and he is a real key part of this team. Overall, the advanced numbers don't really love him. The win shares are okay. His actually defense in defensive box score plus minus was not ideal. It was negative 1.4, worse than his offense. And PER wasn't great, but he does provide something for this team, and that on-off number for Dellavedova, I think he's probably the key indicator for me of what he was able to do, and the fact that he was able to fill in for Kyrie at the start of the season and not be a total write-off, that's pretty much all they could have expected. Speaking of total write-offs, Iman Shumpert was pretty terrible this season. He was the 208th ranked player in 9-cat leagues, and he's 220th in 8-cat leagues, but I in no situation can envisage him being ever a draftable player in 12-team leagues, ever. I think that even in 14-team leagues, it's a real struggle. He just can't really seem to do anything. Now, he did have an interrupted season with that wrist injury, but averaged just 5 points a game in 22.5 minutes. He hit 0.7 threes at just 31%. 3.3 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 0.9 steals, and converted 38% of his total field goals and 76% from the line. Yeah, nothing is positive there at all. And when I say nothing, like literally every one of his statistical categories was a negative. And that's not, it wasn't like he was playing a huge negative chunk of minutes. Like Dellavedova was ranked ahead of him in similar minutes, but had a couple of real positive categories. And Shumpert was just bad in everything. Even if JR leaves and they go, let's play Shumpert 28 minutes a night, which I think would be a pretty poor move because he can't shoot, obviously. I can't ever see him being a player who's a top 100 player in fantasy. So I wouldn't be banking on, oh, Smith's getting old, he's moving on, maybe Daly goes. I just don't see Shumpert being able to do that. Yes, he can go out there and play perimeter defense. Yes, he can go out there and be something, but he was fairly poor throughout the majority of the playoffs, and I don't really anticipate him becoming a player that has much fantasy impact moving forward. He had a PER of just 8.4 this season. He was the two players below him in win shares per 48, which we know win shares per 48 is, you know, the contribution to the team's wins, you know, extrapolated to per 48 minutes, so it's not based on how many games you play. The two players worse than him were Jared Cunningham, which many people wouldn't even know played on this team, and Joe Harris, who doesn't play on any team anymore after he was traded to Orlando and then waived. So out of the regular players on this team, Iman Shumpert, the worst. He did have a great defensive box score plus minus at 1.9, one of the tops on the team in that area. If you don't count Sasha Korn's 95 minutes, LeBron was one, Shumpert was two, and that's where his value comes, but that doesn't translate into fantasy. He doesn't get steals at a very high rate, although he was the highest on this team, second highest behind Korn at 2.1%, but it doesn't translate into big steal numbers enough where, oh, I've got to add him like a Tony Allen because I'm going to get, you know, 2 steals a night on average. That's just not what Shumpert does. He provides real value at times. Again, him and Dellavedova missing in the finals. But if I'm going to project one guy to be a top 150 guy potentially next season, it's Dellavedova because he's going to hit threes and get assists, whereas Shumpert's going to provide great on-court defense, great on-ball defense, great, you know, teamwork, but it's not going to translate into fantasy stats, I don't think. Just a quick note, apologies for my voice. For some reason, it's just cracking like crazy at the moment. Channing Frye came across in that Joe Harris trade, and oh, he was really, really good for this team. And, you know, the lineups with him and Love, playing the four and the five together were really tough to stop offensively. He was a 0.3 on-off number. 9-cat, 204, 8-cat, 244, but he's just never going to play a big enough role on this team to be a fantasy-relevant player. He only played 17 minutes a night for the season, 6.2 points, 1.3 threes, 3 rebounds, half a steal, half a block. He shot 46 from the field, 86 from the line, and 41 from 3. So obviously, if you're counting 3-point percentage as a category, he's right up there in that one, and a tremendous contributor there. And he's a great streamer for 3-pointers because he's going to hit threes and he's going to do them at a high percentage without hurting your team's overall field goal percentage. So Channing Frye, yeah, pretty decent season from him, and really was a key contributor in parts of the playoffs and throughout the regular season. A great true shooting for him of 59%. He 71% of his shots were from three, so he knows what his role is. Defensively, he wasn't terrible, just a negative 0.8 defensive box score plus minus. Huge offensive box score plus minus. Third on the team behind Kyrie and LeBron. One of the top players in box score plus minus on the team is sixth there. His VORP was a positive. His PER was almost average at 14.9. So really, really good stuff from Channing Frye. After being lost in Orlando, finds himself in a really great situation and takes advantage of it and helps the Cavs out hugely. I want to talk about big men who played well, and now we're going to talk about big men who were just literally terrible for the whole season. Tim Mozgov, he was the 115th ranked player last season. This year, 228, and that's in 9-cat leagues. He was worse in 8-cat, down to 245th in that format. He was battling knee problems in preseason, and he just could not get on the court. He played just 15.7 minutes per game this year. He averaged 5.5 points. He averaged just 4 rebounds a game. 0.4 assists, 0.3 steals, 0.7 blocks, 56 and 72 as his percentages. So he found himself play 10 minutes a game less this year, score 4 points less, grab 3.5 rebounds less, block half a shot less. And his percentages were still the same, so it wasn't like he was becoming inefficient. He just looked a mess out there. And whenever you want to hear someone or you want to talk yourself into drafting someone because of a contract year, just remind yourself about Tim Mozgov. Contract year, unrestricted free agent. How'd that go for him? I'll say it now because I don't like people getting sucked into it. Contract year, it's a myth. Well, it's not a myth because it happens. People play in the last year of their contracts, but it doesn't mean they get better. Sometimes they get horrendously worse, like Mozgov. And it happens, Rajon Rondo, Robin Lopez last season, just some of the worst years of their careers last season in contract years. They still got paid. Mozgov, who knows what he's going to get now? With the money floating around, someone's going to pay him some cash. But he's 29 years of age. He struggled to move. The knees are a real concern. And did he show anything to any team that makes them go, yeah, maybe. Offensively, he was lost. Still a positive defensively. He's still pretty decent in that sense. But his rebounding was way down. He had a fairly poor rebounding percentage behind Love, behind Thompson. Behind Varejao, behind Korn as well. And that's some of those guys didn't play a huge amount, but he had the starting center role and lost it pretty quickly. And then there were plenty of times where he just didn't play or played 5 minutes. I don't think we'll be looking at Tim Mozgov as being a top 120 player next season. Now, he could go somewhere. Maybe he goes to Portland and becomes their starting center, but I don't have any trust in him being able to approach 30 minutes a night. I think 23 minutes is probably the right spot. And I am a relatively big Mozgov fan and was prior to this season, but he just looked broken, and he's 29 years of age. And remember that number. Once someone gets to 29, there's a concern that a drop-off is going to come, especially when you're an average to below average, above average sort of player. If you're great, your prime extends. If you're average, once you hit 29, it's on the way down, and you've already dropped 100 ranking spots between age 28 and 29. The future does not look all that promising for Tim Mozgov moving forward. Mo Williams. I was pretty excited for Mo Williams. Kyrie's going to be out for a couple of months. Let's draft Mo in the last couple of rounds. And he started off playing pretty well. He was also brutally terrible for big chunks of the season and was completely played out of the rotation by Matthew Dellavedova. He only played in 54 games and 15 minutes a game. 6.6 points, 0.7 threes, 1.9 assists, 0.3 steals, 42, 91, and 34 as his percentage splits. Mo Williams has opted in to his team option for next season. Probably the only, I think he's the only player who's opted in, and he had a $2 million player option, and he opted in. You'd think that his agent said, Mo, no one's going to sign you. Get that $2 million. Because he was really, really poor. And obviously had a big drop-off post-All-Star. Went from 263 to 345. But he was the 121st ranked player last season. So big, big drop-off this season. Obviously a much smaller role. But at the age that he's at, you take a dip, you don't come back. You don't make a return. And with the fact that he's opted in, yes, he'll be there. And maybe they lose Smith. Maybe they lose Dellavedova and he has to start playing minutes. But they're not going to be wanting to rely on Mo Williams to be the primary backup point guard. Yes, we did see some Mo Williams in the finals, but I don't know how that's going to play moving forward and into next season. I wouldn't be having a huge amount of faith in Mo Williams after the showing we saw from him this season. He was the second worst player on this team in VORP. He was below average, below replacement. Negative 3.3 in box score plus minus, terrible win share numbers, PER of just 12, 53% true shooting, nothing looked great, and a pretty high usage of 23% as well. So not a great year from Mo Williams, and at his age, not really seeing the bounce back happen. But again, if Dally leaves and they can't sign a point guard, maybe he has to play, but I don't reckon there's going to be a huge amount of trust in Mo Williams. Let's quickly touch on Richard Jefferson because we're not going to be talking about him next season because he has retired. He was a negative 13.2 on off. Mo Williams, by the way, was a negative 13.5 and a pretty good season from Richard Jefferson. 18 minutes, 5.5 points, 0.8 threes, 2 rebounds, half a steal, 47, 68, and 38 from three. Pretty good numbers from Jefferson there. When he needed to fill in, he put up great performances. We saw him do it in the playoffs. We saw him do it in the regular season as well. Just a great way for him to end his career. James Jones, not much to say about James Jones. Hard to ever see him becoming a fantasy threat at any stage. Just 8.6 minutes this season. Hit 0.7 threes at 38%. That is his one skill. Doesn't do anything else. 3 points a game, 0.9 rebounds, 0.3 assists, 0.2 steals, 0.2 blocks, 39% shooting, 73 from the line. What do you get from James Jones? The answer is not much. He was the 361st ranked player in NICAT leagues and 384 in ACAT leagues. Could he be a top 300 player? I'm going to say absolutely not. We know who he is. He might very well retire at some point coming up, but I think he's still under contract, so he probably won't. I know he's not an unrestricted free agent. He's 35 years of age. Unless LeBron wants to bring him back, I don't know if we're going to see much of an impact from Jim Jones any further. Sasha Korn, he could be in for a bit of an increase next season, but he is 31 years of age. Now, he is signed, and Mozgov, if he's not back, then Korn maybe takes some of Mozgov's minutes. Now, we didn't get to see a huge amount from Sasha Korn. He wasn't ideal when we saw him, just 4 minutes a game at 0.9 points. He did have 1.1 rebounds and shoot 53%, but nothing about what we saw from him makes us think that he's going to be worthy of getting more than 4 minutes a game or taking on those 15 minutes that Tim Mozgov played. There was nothing good about what he did. Advanced numbers, it's hard to judge because it's just a 95-minute sample size, but he did have the highest defensive box score plus minus on this team at 2.7. He was also the fourth worst in terms of offensive box score plus minus, with only Jared Cunningham, Joe Harris, and Andy Varejao behind him. And nothing makes me look at what Korn did and think, yeah, he's going to all of a sudden be an impact player next season. He'll be there at $1 million, maybe as a third center, behind Fry, behind Thompson. And that's sort of where he'll stick. He was the 438th ranked player this season, 445th. Can he get inside the top 400? Yeah, he can. But how many people are going to be really dealing with him in fantasy leagues? Some of us will be in some of the deeper Red Rock leagues, but overall, not a huge amount to really love with Sasha Korn. Jordy McRae, really, really excited to see him play. Was excited to see him in Philadelphia, but he never got an opportunity there. He played 24 games this season and played 8 minutes, 4.5 points, half a three, again, just in 8 minutes, so not bad numbers. An assist a game, 46, 75, and 48% from three. Now, 48% from three is obviously really high. really high. He in the preseason, he shot 8% from three. Which one's real? Neither of them. He's probably somewhere in between. Now, with McRae, I think there's a bit to like about him. His per 36 numbers looked pretty good. 19.5, 4, 4.5, 2 triples. But it comes on such limited minutes, it's hard to really get too much of a judgment on him. But he played one game in early April against Detroit, the last regular season game. He played 47 minutes. He scored 36 points and had 4 rebounds, 7 assists and 3 triples. He took 29 shots in that game, so he obviously had a fair bit of the ball in his hands. But he can score. He had a 52-point game in the D-League. He is a guy to keep an eye on because when Smith gets older, if Shumpert goes, if Shumpert is traded off, if Dellavedova goes, McRae could find a role as a scoring two-guard. Again, didn't play many minutes. Horrific defensively, -3.6 box score plus-minus, but it is in just 113 minutes. He is a player that probably tops out as a top 250 guy. I think that's probably the best way of looking at him, but can be a decent scorer, can hit threes, and you might be able to get you some steals. Not a terrible guy in that area, but you can handle the ball a little bit as well. So he's someone to watch out for. Your league has to be really deep to consider him, but I do think that he can have some sort of an impact in the next two seasons, would be my guess. I reckon the Cavs do pick up his team option for less than $1 million, and they'll want to see how he goes. That's it. That is the Cavaliers roster. I'm going to take a quick break. Then we're going to be back for the Fan Essentials question segment, including the announcement of the first winner of the Fan Essentials questions, and to look at a couple of drafted players who haven't played for the Cavs just yet. I saw you. Cavs players drafted last season and see how they went whilst they weren't playing with the main team, and then answer a question from you guys, proudly brought to you by Fan Essentials. Now, Fan Essentials, if you don't know what Fan Essentials is, how would you like to get all of your favorite NBA teams' merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? If you do, check out fanessentials.net, and all you do is pick out your favorite sports team, and every month you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear so you don't have to, and each fan box comes packed full of some amazing gear. It makes for a great gift idea for any sports fan. Prices start at just $34.99, and you visit fanessentials.net and use the promo code REDROCK, which is the code we use for all of our sponsors. At checkout, you get 30% off your first month. Visit fanessentials.net to get all the essentials you need. You can also get yourself a free month of Fan Essentials by submitting questions to the podcast, and the best question each week will receive 1 month sponsorship, 1 month free from Fan Essentials. And for the first one of those giveaways, the question of the week goes to Joseph Diffenbach. So Joseph, you are the proud recipient of a free month from Fan Essentials. So hopefully you enjoy that. I'll speak to you privately, and we'll get your details so we can set that up with Fan Essentials. Now, the first question for this new week comes from... let's do the question. The first question comes from James Conlon. He says, will Jordan McRae ever become fantasy relevant? Well, I just talked a bit about Jordy McRae. Yeah, I reckon he's got a chance to become, but probably a chance to become a 16-team league guy at some point, maybe. I'm not really ever sure he becomes a top 100 player. But the kid can score, and he does have... Yeah, I reckon he's got a solid-ish future in the NBA. Maybe he plays 3 or 4 seasons, but I could see him becoming someone like a Will Barton, maybe, as a out-of-nowhere sort of scorer. Maybe a Kent Bazemore-y type of player as well. Again, someone who was trash and then turns in a decent-ish season. But he can score. if he's given the opportunity. It might not happen for two more seasons. But yeah, I think Jordy McRae does have the talent to become a fantasy relevant player. A 12-teamer is probably tough, but as I said, 14 or 16, so maybe he cracks the top 150. It's a definite possibility. Let's talk about their drafted players from last season. One of the best names in the draft, Sir Dominic Poynter, was drafted by the Cavaliers last season. They played him with the Canton Charge last season, and he didn't do a huge amount. He played in 50 games, but only just 20 minutes a game, scoring 7 points a game, 4.5 rebounds. He had a steal a game, he had 1.4 blocks, and he shot 44% from the field. Now, Poynter is a guard, he's 6'6", so the fact that he blocked 1.5 shots a game and got a steal a game, shooting 44%, is pretty impressive. Now, he hit just 17% of his threes, which is something that he needs to work on, and only 63% of his free throws, so that is definitely a concern. But defensively, he was a real stud for this team. A defensive box score plus minus in the D-League of 4.6 is huge. Your PER of just 12.7, and a lot of that's brought down because of the poorness of his shooting, but he can be a guy that is just a tremendous defensive presence, and maybe he fits into a Iman Shumpert sort of role at some point, if Shumpert, which has been the rumor in many sort of trades, if Shumpert gets moved on, maybe Poynter can come in and be that guy as a defensive wing. He really does need to work on his shooting though, because 17% is obviously not going to cut it. The other player the Cavs have is someone that is more intriguing, and that is Seti Osman, who is a 6'8 wing, who's Macedonian / Turkish. He's currently playing in Turkey for Anadolu Efes, which has quite a few NBA players that have played for him. His last season, it wasn't spectacular. He played just 22 minutes a night, but he averaged 9 points. He had 3.5 rebounds. He gave you a steal a game. But he shot the ball pretty well, 47% from the field, 40% from three, and 70% from the free throw line. He also turned in some decent win shares numbers, 5.6 or 5.5 in win shares, and an above average PER of 16. He's an interesting player to me. His true shooting was through the roof, 59. He comes relatively highly regarded. They picked him, well, it was part of a trade they did. He was a very high second round pick last season. Osman's, from all accounts, not coming this season. That could change at this point. But he is a player who can have an impact as a Bojan Bogdanovic, a sort of 20-24 minute a night guy who's a dead-eye shooter from deep. And the Cavs, he's an asset to them. And he could be brought across if Smith happens to leave and they want to fill some of these wing roles on this team. I really think that he can be a player that can come over, hit some threes. He's not going to do much in any other areas, get some steals, maybe a couple of rebounds, but be an efficient three-point shooter. And that has definitely deep league impact. I think he could come over and be a top 250 player when he does come over, but he is a better player, a better prospect than what Poynter is. We just don't know at this point exactly when he is going to come over. That's it for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, the NBA season's over. Don't leave this podcast. So there's plenty of stuff we're going to be doing. Obviously, the NBA draft's coming up. We're still going to do the Golden State Warriors season in review show as well. Then we'll have the draft and the draft review show. And then the week after that, before Summer League starts, we'll be talking about just a few other topics, which I'm open to suggestions and questions about as well. Probably looking at some potential early breakouts. We'll start recruiting for the 30-team real salary cap league once we get this second 30-team league. Everyone signed up. There's a couple of people still waiting. Sign up so I can do that draft video for that one, so you can work out your draft spots in that as well. And then we'll start recruiting for the 30-team real salary cap league as well. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Hey, follow Red Rock Fantasy Football at Red Rock Football. Basketball Monster, you know about Basketball Monster. Fan Essentials, Fantrax, go to Fantrax, go to Fan Essentials. Help support the podcast. Not just support the podcast, but do yourselves a favor with some great gear from Fan Essentials and the absolute best place to host the Fantasy League, which is Fantrax. You know about Basketball Monster. Can't wait to get stuck into the projections for next season and when we open them up, which will likely be in August sometime for the new season with projections for the season and DFS stuff as well. Great news in New York with the DFS ruling. DFS is full steam ahead now, and we're going to have a better product again. We'll be talking with Ken, who is the owner of Basketball Monster, at some point in the podcast in the next couple of months, just highlighting all the new changes we've got coming through for the season as well. hopefully I'll be able to report live from Summer League this year. Still not sure, still working that out, but hopefully I'll be able to report live from over there this year. If you listen to this, which you obviously are because you just heard me say it, a subscription on iTunes is great, a review is awesome, a ranking is fantastic, and a thumbs up on YouTube, that's all I ask for, that's all you need to do. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.